Let's talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Play-by-play call of the day. History last night at the Superdome for Drew Brees.
He starts in the shotgun, drops back, looks to the far sideline, wide open, Traquan Smith. And Traquan Smith is going to go to the end zone. Drew Brees has done it. You have just witnessed history in New Orleans. Drew Brees is the NFL's all-time leading passer.
Indeed, as he surpassed Peyton Manning last night, and Drew Brees is the all-time leader in passing yardage in the history of the NFL, setting the record last night. I think after the 15th or 16th time, I hope all of you got it on the broadcast that Drew Brees is 6 feet tall. Like, I got it, okay? Okay, I don't have to be told for the 18th time he's 6 feet tall. All right, Gennaro Armas, old friend, respected friend, who covers the Brewers, the Packers, and he's with the Associated Press. He covers a lot more than just that. But Gennaro, welcome back. It's great to have you with us.
Steve, hey, thanks for having me back. Good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you. Let's start with the Brewers, who will be in the National League Championship Series against the Dodgers. A lot of people may not realize that when it comes to homegrown talent, the Cardinals probably got, half their production from homegrown talent this year. They were number one. The A's were dead last. The Brewers were next to last. This team has been built by trades. How important and how interesting has the wheeling and dealing been over the last 5 years to construct what we see today?
Yeah, well, you know, with the Brewers, a lot of that construction has been done over the last 3 years, especially since David Stearns came in as GM. Now, the interesting thing with those trades is that, yeah, a lot of that production is from outside the house, but they were able to get these guys from obviously developing some of their minor league farm system. And a lot of these guys they have coming back, like a Moustakas, a Kane. Well, Kane is a little different, but a Moustakas, Yelich, who they signed, who they traded for back in the offseason. I mean, these are guys still relatively young. Yelich is only 26. Moustakas is in his late 20s. So these are not over the hill kind of guys who are you're buttressing your roster for the stretch run.
Kane's interesting because he actually was with the Brewers and dealt to the Royals.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So you know, Kane and Yelich especially have you know, really changed the dynamic of the top of the lineup from last year too. So. I mean, there's definitely a part. That's definitely a big thing. A lot of the production is from out, not homegrown, especially offensively. But looking at the pitching staff, the bullpen, a lot of these young arms in the bullpen, the Burns, Brandon Woodruff's, Freddy Peralta's, they've been contributing out of the pen as, you know, 2-3 inning guys. And they could be probably starters down the road, although, you know, Craig Counsell, the manager, also has this mentality of, quote unquote, outgetters and getting away from sort of traditional starting and relieving roles. And you saw them using that to success in that game one against the Rockies.
No question about it. Give me a read on Christian Yelich, because obviously, you know, the guy that everybody wanted from the Marlins happened to be Giancarlo Stanton. The guy that had the better year was Christian Yelich. What made him a difference maker?
Oh, boy. Man, especially the way he's come out of the second half of the year. You know, part of it is just simply confidence. You know, you're not in sort of this, you know, I talked to his parents last week. They were talking about, you know, he likes being there. And, you know, consider the difference from where he was the last 3-4 years in Miami, where they were constantly rebuilding. They never finished above 500 there. They were never really a serious contender. And here, you know, he's looked at as one of the building blocks of the future, and he's producing as such. He's also got this great, smooth, you know, silky swing. He can hit to all fields. It helps that Kane gets on base in front of him, too. You know, he's obviously producing at the right time down the stretch where, you know, arguably he's probably the MVP frontrunner as well. So, And, you know, off the field in the locker room, he's just a good guy. He's He's pretty humble. He's pretty even keeled. He's pretty much everything the Brewers thought they'd be getting when they traded for him.
Mike Moustakas and Lorenzo Cain were two pivotal keys to the Kansas City Royals getting to back-to-back World Series appearances and winning one of them. Have they shown leadership for a team that hasn't been there before that has helped them?
Yeah, I would say especially Cain, who's been there the whole year. Moustakas, they traded for him. They got him at the trade deadline. They are established veterans who have been in that spotlight before. I would toss in Curtis Granderson in there too, who has really just been a great clubhouse presence for a lot of these young guys who have not been in the playoffs before. But you know, those guys, they've obviously gone to a World Series. They know what it's like to be under that media microscope. They've been talking to their teammates about what that pressure is like, and so far so good. They've been a good influence on them.
I was, as a lifelong Red Sox fan, I was mad when they traded Travis Shaw for Thornburg. I was like, what are you doing? I don't get that. What are you doing? How good has Travis Shaw been, and how well did he adapt to second base, because he had never played it until Craig Counsell said give it a shot?
Yeah, you gotta credit Shaw again for making that move, willing to make that switch too, and something I don't think a lot of people knew either. Moustakas also, when he got there, said, I'm willing to do that too. So Moustakas was willing to make the switch too. Obviously, they stuck with Shaw at second base. He's hitting for a slightly lower average this year, but the power is still right there. Another one of these great clubhouse guys, always at his locker, willing to answer questions, win or lose. He's been a steady presence, and I think especially with the way he has accepted the switch and been eaten into his playing time a little bit. I think that's, again, it's one of those great examples of leadership in the clubhouse.
You alluded to earlier about how Craig Counsell uses his pitching staff. It's not conventional. Give us an idea of what his thought process is behind how he handles his starters and his pen.
Yeah, I think, part of it is partly roster construction. So, in the offseason, the biggest need, theoretically, was starting pitching. They didn't have enough starting pitching. They didn't go get starting pitching. The thought was it was just too expensive for them at the trade deadline, so they added hitters. So from there, they still have a lot of these good, young, live arms who are coming up. Again, the Burns, the Woodruffs, the Freddie Peraltas, who maybe aren't quite ready to be stretched out, or they had a cup of coffee. They had a few starts earlier in the season where, they had promised starting, but didn't produce well enough to be consistent rotation guy. Here, they've put them into the pen, and the thought is, well, I can get two, three good innings out of these guys, and then, the first time, when they get through the lineup the next time, when the lineup turns over, I'm going to throw another one of these young guys at the opponent, and they'll have to adjust again. So it's, instead of guys, Carlos Gonzalez mentioned this in the last series, how you're used to like adjusting two, three times through the order against a starting pitcher. Well, now this time you got to adjust to a new reliever every two, three innings. Plus they're throwing as hard as they were. They're throwing the same with the same velocity their whole two, three inning stint down. So it's at least threw the Rockies a curveball. They were not off the game. They were one of the best hitting teams in the majors this year.
And by the way, everybody loves Wade Miley. He's usually done in about an hour and 15 minutes. There's nobody who works faster on the planet than he does.
Right. Yeah.
Hey, I've got to ask you about Bob Uecker. You're talking about five decades, or is he in his fifth decade? A lot of people, I think, around don't really realize that Bob Uecker's there because it's Milwaukee. Obviously, he is held in the highest regard there. And what's it been like to hear him a little bit and be around him a little bit?
Boy, you can really hear in his calls the energy there. I I would say, in one sense, there's not a lot of difference between what he's doing now and what he's done in the last few years, whether the Brewers are up or down. In another sense, you can really, sense the emotion, and he's true blue Brewer, and you can sense that in his calls. He's obviously well respected in the clubhouse and in the organization. He's been with them through thick and thin, and it's really good to see someone like him who's stuck with them for a while. Potentially, I don't know if this is going to be his last year or not, but if it's not, he's close to the end of his career. It's good to see him go out or get close to going out on this note.
And by the way, they'll open up the series with the Dodgers on Friday night, and that game will be at Miller Park, and then game two is going to be Saturday at Miller Park as well. I want to get to the Packers for a moment. We keep hearing and reading about Aaron Rodgers, coaching staff. I mean, is there anything real to that?
I would term it as, Rodgers and McCarthy have been together, 12, 13 years now?
Right, yeah.
I think, like in any relationship that long, there's going to be dysfunction at times. Rodgers is a very smart guy. He doesn't really say things in the media unless there's like a calculated, there's something behind it too. So he's clearly wanting to send the message last week after when he made his comments after the Buffalo game, even though they won 22-0. That being said, they're both highly competitive guys. Obviously, Rodgers wouldn't be where he is right now unless he wasn't. The Packers offensively have been a little hamstrung by Rodgers' knee. He's a little more mobile right now, and he's still got the arm, but he's been off a little at sometimes too. And you got to wonder how much that brace on the knee is impacting him. Same thing at the same time too. He's been without Randall Cobb and Geronimo Allison for much or all of the last two games, and that hope for clicking with Jimmy Graham at tight end hasn't been quite there yet. There's been some speculation whether Graham has lost a step. He's not getting the separation maybe that he used to get. So that leaves you with Devontae Adams as the real, he's producing to what everyone expected him to produce. But other than that, it's been kind of disappointing. I think they'll tell you that too. The running game, Aaron Jones, too. He's been looking promising out of the backfield. He probably will emerge as the top ball carrier out there down the stretch. But they weren't able to use him much too last week because they got behind so quickly that Montgomery and Williams are more of a suitable to sort of passing down roles. So. It's been a little dysfunctional, especially with the way that they've had these Jekyll and Hyde games too. One good half and one bad half, other than Buffalo game last week.
Green Bay has changed in terms of how they do business because they changed general managers. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Would Le'Veon Bell ever be a consideration, or is that something that's just not even talked about?
My opinion, I don't think that would be a consideration. I think it would upend sort of the delicate sort of balance of the finances going down the road. They just signed Rodgers, re-signed Rodgers to an extension. They've got decisions to make with Clay Matthews, Naha, Clinton Dix. I would think that if they were going to invest in any notable eggs down the road, it would have been Khalil Mack, and they were discussing him too. I don't think Bell would be I would say any team would want Bell, but I don't think it would be the right fit for philosophically for what they do in Green Bay.
That's what we thought, because in the Western Pennsylvania, he's the savior. He's going to be arriving in a bye week in a helicopter. It's going to be great. The Steelers are this close, Gennaro, to the Super Bowl now just by his arrival. All right, so.
Right.
And that's in case for anybody who hasn't watched the Steelers play defense. Okay, Gennaro, thanks so much. Appreciate it. We look forward to talking to you again. I hope everything's well with you.
Same here. Thank you, Steve.
Hey, thanks so much, Gennaro. Gennaro Armas joining us, Associated Press, works out of Wisconsin. Always great to talk with him. Really, first-class reporter, did a great job on the Central Pennsylvania and Penn State beat for years. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Do new car prices scare you?
Then you haven't been to Sunbury Motors Kia.
I want to see you in a Kia. Sunbury Motors Kia.
Sunbury Motors Kia takes the scariness out of new car shopping with 20 new 2018 Kias under 20 grand. They make it easy and affordable to own a new Kia. Choose from 2018 Kia Fortes, Souls, Rios, and Optimas. Kia is the home of America's best value. The 2019 Kia models will be rolling in, and Sunbury Motors Kia needs to move the 2018s now. All include Kia's 10-year, 100,000-mile limited powertrain warranty. New car shopping? Don't be scared. Come to Sunbury Motors Kia and choose from 20 new 2018 Kias under 20 grand. Sunbury Motors Kia on the Golden Strip in Hummel's Wharf and at sunburymotorskia.com.
Tax and tax extra. Offer expire 10/31/18. Restrictions apply. Warranty is a limited powertrain warranty. For details, see retailer or go to kia.com.
Another big day for your guy, Antonio Brown.
Not a good look.
He is being sued. I think, is it $15,000? Two different, something like that.
Yes, that is correct. For damages from what occurred from inside and outside a South Florida apartment back in April, allegedly threw a bunch of items out off of a balcony and almost hit a two-year-old boy who was sitting next to a swimming pool at that apartment complex.
Just so you know, the balcony was 14 stories high.
I guess it wasn't long after that. He either signed a 3 or 6 month lease for that place. I guess it wasn't long after that he left. Not a good look.
No, it's not a good look.
I don't know. He's there. Things are adding up with this guy, with AB. I mean, yeah, he missed, and ironically enough, it was back in the spring he missed some voluntary team workouts right around that time, and he was not in the earth. It's been, let's say, about the first week of training camp out in Latrobe. He was calling out one of the longtime Steelers beat writers and not really using good wordage there for that. Went to social media and not to his, not face to face. So I'm kind of wondering if he needs some help. Get some help. Get your mind straight. Get your life together. I mean, I guess he has various kids with multiple women. A lot of people may not know that. So there's a lot more to the guy than just that bright smile when the camera's on his face.
I'd like to point out, though, that he does a great job in the pizza commercial.
Yeah. Yeah, him and Juju dancing around after they get their delivery. Yeah.
Yeah. Terrific.
But, yeah, the cops showed up back on April the 24th, found him to be very agitated and was... He thought that he was set up for something else and was maybe alleged. They thought that the cops were going to show up, that they were going to accuse him of being, charged with stealing close to $80,000 worth of merchandise and a gun. And so just.
I mean, Bob, you've dealt with the law before from what I've heard.
Rumor has it.
Hey, this doesn't sound good.
It's never a good sign when there's cash and items missing. Never a good sign.
Hey, there are certain key words along the way that are critical, like firearms.
No question. Steve, during one of the breaks, Sean and I were talking about something we think we're going to work on for next year. We think we're going to nominate you, and I'm a Penn State alum, to be the Grand Marshal of the Homecoming Parade, and Jack Ham will drive you in the Cadillac convertible. And I think this is doable. I really do.
If I were ever afforded the honor, I would only do it unless Jack and I did it together.
Well, yeah, let him drive the convertible.
No,
and,
he's the Hall of Famer, for goodness sake.
I say Jack can sit back there with Steve, and Jack can at least wear the chauffeur's cap. He just doesn't have to drive the caddy.
I mean, this is where, like, think about somebody who'd be perfect to, like, drive and just, you know what I mean?
Well, it's good. People are going to say, listen.
I think the suit would be perfect.
I do, too, but I think that people are going to say, hey, who's that guy with Steve Jones riding in the back of the convertible?
How about you and me in the front, Bob? We'll drive.
Yeah, we'll drive.
We'll drive. Sign us up. Heck, yeah.
The campaign starts tomorrow.
Yeah. Great. Sounds like a lot of fun. Would that mean I'd have to actually go?
Well, you could throw Tootsie Rolls at the crowd.
That's true. We're taking them away from a Friday night out on the golf course. That's true.
No question about that.
Yeah, I got to think about that.
Struck a chord.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us on the show today, brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Arkansas State against Appalachian State in football tonight. Yankees-Red Sox game 4 tonight. Penn State gets ready for Michigan State. And, of course, news-wise, there's Hurricane Michael, which I think has kind of caught everybody by surprise. At the moment, it's a Category 3 hurricane that's going to hit the Florida Panhandle. We'll probably feel the effects of it here on Thursday. And in another story, this one dealing with sports, Eli Manning feels now he can walk in public without being hit by anybody. They have waived Eric Flowers. Whew. That was a rough run in New York at tackle for Eric Flowers. A rough run. Oof.
So who goes on the mound tonight in the Yankees-Red Sox matchup?
Let's see. The Red Sox are going to go with Rick Porcello. I'm not sure who the Yankees are going with. Let me look that up and see who the Yankees are going with.
I thought it was CeCe tonight.
It is CeCe Sabathia tonight, yeah. CeCe Sabathia.
So they're throwing out the big moose for the Yankees. He's a big, big guy, no question.
Yeah, but he's also been a heck of a pitcher in his career. He's really good. Really good. And look, you don't expect him to go 7 innings tonight. He's probably not capable of that, but he's going to try and give him 6 innings. And then go from there. Porcello pitched in game 1. Actually, I thought he pitched pretty well.
I'm really trying to decide what I'm going to watch. You know, Appalachian State just has me thrilled. So, you know, I don't know whether I'm going to do a lot of dial shifting here between the baseball and college football.
I think it's just being a Tuesday night college football game. Tuesday night college football just doesn't flow off the tongue.
No, it really doesn't.
No.
But you're right. What else is out there to watch?
Well, here are the undefeated teams in college football right now, and here's their strength of schedule down the stretch. Alabama's number 1. Toughest game remaining, according to them, is November 3rd. They're at LSU. They also have Auburn on that schedule. The remaining strength of schedule is 27. Okay. Ohio State is 6-0. Their remaining strength of schedule is 34. Toughest remaining game is with Michigan. Notre Dame, remaining strength of schedule, 64.
That high or that low? I mean, I thought it would be...
No, their schedule. I talked about this yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, they play home with Pitt. Their game with Syracuse is at Yankee Stadium. Their game with Navy's in San Diego. And they've got a lot of things going their way. Clemson, remaining strength of schedule, 37. Toughest remaining game at Boston College.
Ooh.
That's no, they'll win that game.
Yes.
Georgia. Remaining strength of schedule is 9. See, Georgia's crossover games are LSU and Auburn. You know, they have to cross over into the other division. West Virginia, remaining strength of schedule is 3. They still have to play Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, and Texas. They haven't played any of them yet. North Carolina State is 5-0. Most of America and many people outside of Raleigh don't know they're 5-0. The remaining strength of schedule is 67. They do have to play at Clemson. Colorado is 5-0. Their remaining strength of schedule is 31. They still have to play, and it's going to be next week when they play at Washington. Central Florida. We hear so much about Central Florida. Remaining strength of schedule, 77. They play at Memphis this Saturday. It's their toughest game probably left. South Florida is 5-0. Remaining strength of schedule is 70. Toughest game in Houston. Cincinnati. Remaining strength of schedule, 80. Toughest game at Central Florida.
Wow.
On November the 17th. So there you go. Those are the undefeated teams. Not every undefeated team is created alike.
No, those schedules are not made for some teams and made like heaven for others.
Yeah, well, Alabama can handle whatever. They can handle the Georgia schedule. They have to anyway. They have to play Auburn and LSU themselves. But, look, you need to have, if you're going to stick with four, if you're going to stick with four in the college football playoff, I think there need to be certain parameters in place to make it right. Some of the parameters to me should be, number one, you must play 9 games in your conference. Number two, you need to play 10 Power 5 games. And I think those are two big ones. Now, there are some that say that you should you should put together like an ACC Big Ten basketball challenge. You should do an SEC Big Ten challenge as part of your non-conference. A Big 12, Pac-12 challenge as part of your schedule. I understand that. I think it's a little difficult to do. The Big Ten and Pac-12 tried to put together a series of games early in the season. It was, I think, a 3 or 4 year contract they put together, and Stanford and USC had to back out of it, which then flushed it because they have games with USC already has games, a game with Notre Dame. Stanford has a game with Notre Dame. They're both long term contracts. And I'm trying to think, there's one other game USC plays that's a problem. That's a non conference game. And they had to get rid of it. But the Big Ten and Pac-12 tried to do it.
Big Ten ACC wouldn't be bad. I mean, that's, we do that in basketball already.
You know what? It wouldn't be bad because I think it would be good for the Big Ten. The ACC does not have a lot of great teams.
No.
And this, they have Clemson, which is a great team. But, I mean, you want to talk, look, schedules are put together in advance. So if the three of us were sitting here in the year 2014, and we're looking at Notre Dame's 2018 schedule, now this is sitting in 2014, so we're going back 4 years, mm-hmm. and we see they're playing at Virginia Tech, they've got to play Florida State, they're going to play Stanford, they're going to play USC, right? They're going to play Michigan. Now, what are we thinking in 2014? Wow.
No question.
Okay. So now, in 2018, there's a different reality. Michigan, I think, is pretty good, right? So let's just, okay. So Michigan, I think, is pretty good. We're going to find out more about Michigan in the coming weeks, right? Stanford is having an off year. USC's having an off year. Florida State is really having an off year. Virginia Tech's having an off year. The schedule is not what it was 4 years ago with the same names.
And that is the difficulty in college football, trying to have that crystal ball 5 years down the track.
Yeah. I mean, again, if we sat here in 2014 and we looked at their schedule, we'd be saying, holy cow, boy, does Notre Dame have a tough schedule in 2018? Then 2018 rolls around. Look, one of the last things we expected was Florida State to be down. Yeah, we didn't expect Virginia Tech to be down. Stanford's good every year. We didn't expect them to be down. And USC, especially when you look at when Sam Darnold was there, they were on the upward track. Well, right now, that's not a good game.
Yeah. And Northwestern are still trying to figure out if they're really that good of a team.
Yeah, Northwestern's always good, but they have to have everything go right. So Josh Jackson, of course, graduates. Jeremy Larkin's going to take over at tailback. They love Larkin. I've seen Larkin play. You can tell he really had it. And then, of course, he medically had to be shut down, and his career's over. They had to do it 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, end of story for them.
Right. Thorson tears his ACL in the bowl game. So they've been trying to, and I think they've wisely handled this situation, picking and choosing to where they play him. So, again, that becomes a problem. So, I mean, it's a schedule that 4 years ago looked like, man alive, you negotiate that. You're an automatic. Now it's playing out in 2018 where, yeah, okay, so what? That's a good win, not a great one. Because that's the way then sometimes you'll face somebody where you'll say, oh, my goodness, what did we get ourselves into?
Well, it goes back to what Bob just said a minute ago about the crystal ball. It's like when we got news that Penn State was going to play Auburn in a two-year series and West Virginia as well. Who's to say if they're going to drop a peg or two here a couple years down the road?
Nobody knows.
Exactly.
Yeah. Nobody knows.
No, I think the 2 points you make, Steve, about you must have 9 games within the conference you're in and 10 Big Five conference games kind of rounds out the schedule, and it avoids all the Troy States and Appalachian States and things like that on the schedule that you can boost your record to make you look a lot better than you actually are.
Well, I think it's everyone assumes, I know I do, that at some point this is going to be expanded. Now, I'm not for that right now, but I think at some point it's going to be expanded to 6 or possibly 8. We still have arguments about it, but I think there's just too much money there. And for some odd reason, money talks.
Yeah, amazing how that works out. And, you know, when you look at college basketball as a comparison, if you're, you know, in the March Madness, how many weeks do you add on to a basketball schedule with that system? Well, like 3 or 4.
Yeah, but the NCAA, that's their primary moneymaker. They don't care.
Yeah, that's $1 billion plus a year right to Indianapolis.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, college football is not the NCAA's moneymaker. It is the moneymaker for all the schools and the conferences. But the NCAA has nothing to do with college football except be the overseer of rules and so forth. Financially, they don't benefit. The conference commissioners put together their TV contracts. The commissioners put together the deals with the bowl games, so the NCAA is out of it. But when it comes to basketball, the NCAA, that tournament, that 3 weeks, that is their baby. That's where they make their money, and then, of course, they distribute it to the member institutions. But that is their baby. So if that means you've got to miss class in the middle of the week to go to Boise to play a Thursday game, and by the way, you're required to be there on Tuesday night for a Thursday game because the NCAA requires you to go through an open practice on Wednesday and then do a press conference. So when it comes to their ability to make money, they really don't care how much class you miss. And don't let them tell you, oh, no, it's so important. I go, well, then, fine. Then why aren't you playing these games on the weekend?
Yeah, it's all about the academics, right? Nah.
Well, look, I mean, in order, the term student athlete, and I use it because that's what they prefer you to use. Okay?
Sure.
But it's done for legal purposes. It's part. The terminology student athlete is to keep in part to keep from paying them.
Well, there's things like workers' compensation for injuries. There's things like, as we've talked a couple of years ago, Steve, unionization, etc. That all have. So if you use the phrase student athlete, you can avoid. At least in the when the courtroom battles flare up, you can try to avoid responsibility or liability with that cleverly used phrase.
Right, and it's interesting how okay in football, when Penn State played Illinois, that is the first time in, and because that Virginia game got moved back in 2001. It's the first time in my lifetime that Penn State football players missed any class. They may have missed it to go to USC in 1990 and 91 because they had to leave so early on a Friday morning to go out there. But they hadn't missed any classes because all the games are on weekends. You leave Friday afternoon. So you're not missing any class. You know, bowl games take place during term break. Basketball actually does a very good job of scheduling. Because they actually miss relatively few classes. Chartering really helps, but they still have to miss some classes. But when it comes to the NCAA tournament, they don't care if you miss classes. If they cared, they wouldn't be scheduling the games on Thursdays and Fridays and forcing you to be there 48 hours ahead of time. They wouldn't be putting you in Dayton on Monday and Tuesday. Or, excuse me, on Tuesday and Wednesday. Okay? We're requiring you to be there on Monday. They don't care about you missing class. They didn't schedule the tournament in such a way where you couldn't miss class.
No,
they don't care.
Basketball all revolves around television, obviously.
Every sport revolves around television. Every single one. Why is Penn State playing volleyball tomorrow night at Purdue? Playing volleyball tomorrow night at Purdue because it's on TV instead of playing it on Friday here. I mean, that's why they're playing tomorrow. I mean, even volleyball's in that spot. Where they have to, Russ Rose has had to change how he practices, how he goes about his business, because that's what TV comes from. And it's not as if volleyball or wrestling, you'll see them on TV, they don't get any financial benefits from the television money because they're not included in the television package. They're just an add-on so they can carry football and basketball. But, you know, you want to carry as much of that stuff as possible so they benefit from it, and they deserve to benefit from it because the exposure is great, but financially they get zero from it.
It just amazes me to no end that that is the case, but as you so artfully point out, Steve, that is the case.
Well, it is the case, and I always like to point out to people, well, they could get their own contract. No, they couldn't. Okay, the best that wrestling could do would be to get an internet contract. To be honest, if they were just independent.
Sure.
They were just independent. Like, for example, Oklahoma State's on what, Flow Wrestling?
Yes.
Something like that. Right? That's the best any wrestling program could do if they didn't have a BTN at hand.
Yeah, well, you
because
know.
Because they're so fortunate they've got BTN because they'll carry women's basketball, women's volleyball, wrestling, baseball, softball, soccer, things like that. They'll carry all these other sports. The benefit to all these other sports is off the charts. Penn State's going to play women's soccer against Rutgers Sunday at 3 o'clock at Jeffrey Field. That's on BTN. Penn State's going to be up against Nebraska in volleyball Saturday night. That's not. Because they have football.
Yeah. And that's in terms of women's volleyball. Let's be serious for just a second. Nebraska and Penn State in women's volleyball is the equivalent of the Olympic finals. Those are two of the premier women's volleyball programs in the country.
And Russ Rose was the guest on the show last Thursday night at Permane Brothers, and he said, "Look," he said, "the Big Ten is as close to professional volleyball as you're going to see."
Oh.
He's right about that. We will come back, wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
K.
Just a quick question for you, Sean. Does the suit work on commission?
That's a great question.
Because
I thought he did.
Do you think maybe we ought to do a GoFundMe page?
I think the suit works on commission when the client customer is a food service entity. Yeah, merchant.
Well, he can personally keep them alive.
Yes.
Right.
Put food on the table, so to speak.
Right, and stimulate the economy at the same time.
Yes.
It's win-win.
By the way, Brock Holt hit for the cycle last night.
Yeah.
First time in the history of Major League Baseball that's happened in the postseason. He is not in the lineup tonight.
Well, he's analytics.
Yeah, well, he's a left-handed bat, and they want to have the right-handed bat of Ian Kinsler in there against CC Sabathia.
And Sean and I are already starting the We Want Steve Jones for Homecoming Grand Marshal with Jack Ham to go along. And Sean and I will get a convertible, Mustang convertible from Sunbury Motors. We'll drive it for the Homecoming Parade next year in State College.
I think Tom Hertz would sign in for that.
I think he would, too.
Yeah.
He'd probably want to drive it.
That's true.
Fabulous. A reason for me to live.
Yes. All right. Life will go on for Steve Jones and Jack Ham, folks.
This is, to be honest with you, this is just the emotional boost the two of us need.